everyone, and welcome to Minute 62 of Season 3 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action movie Die Hard, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Andrea Loaf, author of a published academic article on Die Hard called John McClane's Origin Story, Understanding Die Hard as Film Adaptation of Roderick Thorpe's Nothing Lasts Forever, which you can find in the International Journal of Literary Humanities. Welcome back to the show, Andrea.
Thanks for having me. And you got it all out. Those long titles. You did it so perfectly.
Well, I wasn't doing it by heart. I'll give you that. I was reading it, but that's fine. Thankfully, my reading skills, work. Back in the 80s, they had the whole thing called the riff. Reading is fundamental, right? So
yeah.
I wasn't part of the program, but it's still stuck with me. What can I say? So minute 62 begins with Sam thinking of a solution and ends with Hans playing with his walkie-talkie. So yesterday we ended things with Thornburg in the newsroom, trying to bug his producer Sam to get him to give him one of the trucks for him to go out and check out and see what's going on in Nakatomi, and mm-hmm. he didn't want to let him go do it. And then basically he started saying that there's another reporter named Simon that's at a Santa sing-along. And he says to him, I'll tell him to swing on by. And at this point, Thornburg says to him, I'm not sitting on this for Simon. And then Sam goes, I don't want to hear it. And then Thornburg says, this is my story. And then he goes, I can't hear you. All right, look, Sam, I'll tell you what. You don't want to give me a truck? I'll go out and I'll steal a truck. And then we get an interjection from the newsroom itself, where we have the
Harvey and Gail.
Harvey, right. We have the newscaster Harvey saying, give us a break, Thornburg. And he responds, eat it, Harvey. And then we have the cameraman turning towards Harvey and says, 4, 3, 2, 1. And then there's silence for a few seconds and then he goes, Harvey, we're on the air. And then he goes, good evening. This is Harvey Johnson. And I'm Gail Wallins. And this is Nightline News at 10. Our top stories on this Christmas Eve, the high tide by the Southland shores. We go live for a report in Malibu. Mm-hmm. And at this point, Sam just turns over to Thornburg and says, take truck number 5 and get out of here.
Yeah.
So,
because he's obviously distracting Harvey.
Yeah, completely. That's part of it. Mm-hmm. But, I really like the way the scene plays out. It's a fun little banter to show, that the antagonism in the newsroom, between Harvey and Dick, they mm-hmm. apparently don't like each other. But I mean, yesterday we heard Sam, try to, he told Harvey, keep your pants on. So
yeah,
I guess it's the idea that you need to deal with the talent, that type of thing.
Yeah. Exactly.
You need to coddle the talent in some ways, but by saying keep your pants on, I don't know. I mean, it reminds me of the movie Broadcast News. Have you ever seen that?
I have not.
Okay, with William Hurt and Holly Hunter. So they have a lot of this type of banter. You see the things that happen mm-hmm. in the back of the newsroom. I mean, I remember when I was in college. So one of my courses was a journalism course where the teacher mm-hmm. took me a few times to a newsroom where I was watching mm-hmm. stuff going on. And I always found it really funny because the newscaster would come in shorts and he'd be wearing like a jacket because you don't see his legs under the table. So it's like little behind the scenes things that you don't normally see. So this is what they're doing here also, the way that the whole thing, they just do a nice job of keeping this conversation going and keeping it interesting at the same mm-hmm. time. So I mean, one of the things that stuck out for me was the fact that he says he's going to steal a truck, which is just really funny.
He's so dramatic.
No, but like, can you just, I mean, it's funny. Doesn't he just, can you just take the truck? You know, forget
Yeah,
about getting
where are the
permission.
keys kept for these trucks?
Exactly. You know, it's not like Sam has to give him the keys. You know, they probably have a fleet of, let's say, 5 or 10 trucks that are sitting outside. You know, you just go and you take one. You know, I don't know. Maybe because it's, you know, 10 p.m. on Christmas Eve. I don't know. No idea. But the fact that he says he's going to steal the truck. So I went and did a little bit of research as to, you know, the number of car thefts in LA in 1988. And I came across an article from the LA Times, written by someone named Michael Connolly, which this article came out on July 17th, 1988, and Die Hard debuted, I believe, on the 15th, if I remember correctly. So it's very timely from that perspective. So I'm not, obviously I'm not going to read this whole article, but what they talk about here is that they say that there are 51 cars a day that disappear from the valley streets, from valley streets, parking lots, or driveways. Okay, which was up 42% from 2 years earlier. Okay, they said that
Interesting.
there are three different reasons that these cars are being stolen, or they're being stolen by three different types of people for different reasons. What would you think they would be? Any clue?
Well, for parts, you know,
Okay, that's
selling
one
the
of them. Car
parts.
strippers, yes.
If they were fancier cars, I could see like reselling.
Okay, professional theft rings. There you go. That's the second one. And what do you think the third one would be?
Convenience,
No.
needing to get somewhere.
No,
I
but,
don't know.
well, sort of. It's for joyriding. You know, juveniles
Oh,
that would
yeah.
steal cars for
Okay.
joyriding.
Okay.
Okay. They say that 9 out of 10 times these cars are recovered, but they've mostly been damaged or stripped, which you know, makes it a little more difficult. And according to the stats here, in the first 6 months of 1988, there were 9,108 cars that were stolen in the valley, which is a very high number, but just wait, that number gets even higher. So, according to the statistics that they have here also, the year before, in 1987, there were 15,912 cars stolen in 1987. Okay, and part of the problem was is that how many arrests were made of those almost 16,000? Only not even 2,000 arrests. Okay, so you know, I guess part of the thing is because they find most of the cars, so they weren't you know, trying to arrest people for it, because they're probably mostly larger rings. You know, you have you know, large groups that are doing it and stuff like that. Okay, now if you look at it today, okay, so if we said that in 1988 there were 50, almost 16,000 cars stolen, how many cars do you think are stolen a year now in LA County?
Oh, 50,000. I'm just going super
All right,
high.
no,
I think I'm
you
too
went super
high.
high. You went super high, but the answer is around 40,000. It's approximately 40,000
Okay,
cars,
okay.
but that's still an amazingly high number. That's just
Yeah, I was just
unbelievable.
thinking of the population of the area, you
Right.
know, millions of people. Okay.
Right. And they and this
40,000.
article says, this is obviously a different article because the other article is from 1988. This article actually says that during COVID, there was a 40% increase of car thefts, because most people knew that people aren't home, or people aren't using their cars. You know, they're in their homes.
Yeah, some people probably didn't see their cars for months
Yeah.
and not without. Yeah,
Correct.
just I was thinking about that too when you mentioned earlier the newscasters wearing shorts underneath, and I'm like, how many of us have been on Zoom calls? And it's like, well, I'm just sitting here, just like, you know, we're our own news anchors when you're on a Zoom
Correct.
call or any other video call. They can't see. They can't see the lower half of my body.
Correct. Which there are people who have been arrested for things like that, but we won't go there. Yeah, and I mean, I love Thornburg's great comeback where he just eat it, Harvey. Which, you know, it doesn't it doesn't say much, but he's still able to shock Harvey enough that Harvey loses his train of thought.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he really shouldn't have gotten involved in this whole thing. He has no idea what they're talking about. You know, what does he hear him say? He says, "You don't want to give me a truck, I'll go and steal a truck." You know, he doesn't know the entire story about Nakatomi or whatever it is at this point. But
he
we find
know
out
a whole lot.
Well, that we find out later that Harvey isn't the brightest.
Yeah.
You know, which goes back to what I was talking about with broadcast news. You know, the anchorman doesn't necessarily need to have the brains; he needs to have the looks. That's what they want.
Well, with Ron Burgundy, I think we definitely know that.
There you go. There you go. So then we have the cameraman who is, you know, counting down for him, right? And that's it. It's played by an actor named Bob Jennings, who has 21 movie credits and 9 TV credits. And he counts down and then points towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
So why do you think people do that? What's the point of pointing?
I think it's something you, like, as you're looking, I mean, you can hear the countdown, but, like, it can focus on you like a action, you know?
Right. I mean, a lot of times you'll see in movies and TV shows and things like that where they have someone counting down, and at a certain point, mm-hmm. they you know, they'll say 5, 4, and then they won't say the word, they won't say 3, 2, 1.
Yeah.
They'll just use their finger, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
So I looked it up to try and find out why people use hand signals, and it goes close to what you were saying, that they want to be able to reduce the noise level on the set.
Mm-hmm.
Because you never want anyone to be noticed for being too loud. Because, you know, he's mm-hmm. counting down, and what if it goes live a second early or whatever? You'll hear someone mm-hmm. say 1 or something like that. So therefore, you just use the hand signals in order to do that. You know, which people get used to because they're supposed to be looking at them, not looking at mm-hmm. Thornburg on the side, who just mm-hmm. said, "Eat it, Harvey."
Yeah.
And I love how he tries to, you know, reclaim his spot by, you know, picking up his papers and like jostling them a little bit. You know, like that's really
going
to help.
Let me feel important. Yeah.
Exactly. And then he does his, you know, his intro, and, you know, His name is also, he's got a very generic, you know, sounding name, Harvey Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this,
yeah.
You know, most newscasters, you hear it, at least in movies and TV shows, they have generic sounding names. You know, mm-hmm. even though Gail Wallins probably isn't as generic sounding, but it still fits with the whole persona of the whole thing. So
yeah, there's some alliteration with the L's there.
Yes, correct. So Harvey is played by an actor named David Urson, who was born on the 3rd of February, 1951. He has 19 TV credits and 14 movie credits, including roles in Space Jam, Jerry Maguire, wow. Critters 2,
wow.
Bestseller, Real Genius, and Halloween 5, and obviously
oh.
Die Hard. Now, Gail Wallins... is, first of all, her the way she talks, she says it in a very fluffy type of manner also, the way that mm-hmm. she's, you know, she's talking about it. And I love the fact that they're talking about the top stories. Their top story is about the high tide in the Southland
right?
stores.
There's nothing you know, happening.
There's nothing happening. You know, they're not
Except
talking about
Nakatomi.
This. Nakatomi. That's right. They're not talking about a terrorist attack or anything like that. No, of course not. You know. But one of the things that's good here is it actually establishes that we're now, it's 10 p.m. You know, up until now, we're not sure exactly what time it is. I mean, we know that sunset was at 4:50 and John showed up exactly at sunset. So basically, John has now been in the building for 5 hours.
Yeah, that's a long time.
And it doesn't feel that way.
Playing that cat and mouse game. No, it doesn't. Of course, it doesn't. For us as audience of the film, because the film runs
well, it's an hour already. We're at minute 62, so we've already passed the hour
mark.
You know, we're coming up on the halfway mark of the movie, but you know, mm-hmm. still it's an hour of time that we see. So Gail Wallins mm-hmm. is played by a very famous actress named Mary Ellen Trainer, mm-hmm. who was born on July 8th, 1952, and she passed away on the 20th of May 2015, at the age of 62, of pancreatic cancer. Okay,
Oh.
she was the ex-wife of Robert Zemeckis. They were married
Oh, wow.
from, yeah, they were married from 1980 to 2000. They're married for 20 years. She has 29 movie credits, most of them being movies connected to her husband. She was in Romancing the Stone. She was in Goonies, Lethal Weapon, all four
Oh.
Lethal Weapons. She was in Monster Squad, Scrooged, Back to the Future 2, Firebirds, Ricochet, Grand Canyon, Forrest Gump, Congo, Executive Decision, Death Becomes Her. And she also has 17 TV credits beyond that. But as you can see, she wasn't in any movies after she got divorced from Zemeckis. And so at this point, Sam just gets completely frustrated and says, just take the truck. Take truck number five and get out of here. You know, I think he's, as you mentioned earlier, he's just, he's concerned that they're going to be disrupting the news too much. You know, so just get out of here. You know, that type of thing. And then the scene switches and we're back and we hear the bell of the elevator, and we see Carl running across the way, and along with Franco and Fritz. And it's pretty funny that they're running to go, you know, past the hostages, you know, in order to go. You know, I'm not really sure. And they get into Holly's office where everyone is, where Hans is. And Carl then says, he wasn't lying about Marco. He's down on the street. And the other man was Heinrich, and his bag is missing. But he had the detonators. So, I mean, I love the exposition here. It's first of all, it's telling us for sure who these people were.
Yeah, we get more
You know,
names.
now we know it's Marco. Now we know it's Heinrich. You know, and we know that he had his bag filled with detonators. We don't know the purpose, but we know that that's what it is. You know, Hans is very shocked by this type of report. You know, and he's trying to figure out how he should be reacting with the whole thing. And as the minute ends, he picks up his radio and types in the code. And that's pretty much how the whole thing, you know, how this minute ends. So I found that to be quite interesting, the way that they, you know, the cut here. It's a good cut for us, you know, between minutes. So the way that this, you know, plays out before he says his next lines into the walkie-talkie as he's going through. So is there anything else you want to say about this minute before we get into the script?
I just love how Alan Rickman kind of lingers on the word detonators, like, but he had the detonators.
Right.
Like, just
Correct.
it kind of adds the importance of them, even though we don't know why
Or maybe
yet.
he's asking a question, but he had the detonators, didn't he? You know,
Well, it
like,
could be, yeah.
isn't he the henchman that we gave the detonators to?
Yeah.
You know, is that what was
Imagine
written
keep
in the
track of all
script?
those henchmen that keep dying. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, they're up to three now, you know, so
Wow.
who knows? All right. Okay. So the script actually has a few different discrepancies. Yesterday, I failed to mention that the whole newsroom scene is not in the script. So everything that happens here between Harvey and Thornburg that we continued into, and Sam that continues into this minute that started yesterday, it wasn't even in the script. It's just completely cut out. I thought maybe it's like at a different point, and I went through the entire script and I couldn't find it anywhere else. You know, maybe I'll come
Wow.
across it a little bit later, but I don't think so because I think next week Thornburg already shows up at Nakatomi. So
Yeah.
it's very strange the way that they just decided to add this little scene in there, I guess to
Yeah.
show the antagonism between Harvey and Thornburg.
Yeah, to kind of show how he is at his place of work.
And a few other discrepancies here. It says that it's funny that in the description of what happens with Carl, it says Carl steps off the elevator, but we see them running from the elevator. You know, which again, as I mentioned earlier, I don't know why they have to run. I don't see any urgency. You know, Marco's still gonna be dead. Heinrich is still gonna be dead. You know, the detonator will still be gone also, but you know, the two of them will be there. And then the other minor discrepancy was he says he wasn't lying about Marco. He's 30 stories down on the street, which again, it's funnier.
It's a bit of a mouthful.
Yeah, but it's also funnier for him to say he's on the street. He's down on the street, you know. Mm-hmm. And he says the other man is Heinrich, and I found his body upstairs. Mm. So again, not necessary. It's extraneous. I like that they cut those out. You know, it just makes mm-hmm. things flow a little bit better than
exactly.
Before. Yeah. So every Tuesday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track Holiday Edition, where my guests will give a little story, anecdote, fun thing that happened to them some point during their lives, mm-hmm. you know, over some sort of holiday. So Andrew, you got any story for us?
I do, and it's Christmas related because I am of the opinion that Die Hard is a Christmas movie, even though it came out in July. It's set on Christmas Eve. That's my opinion.
Okay.
So
we'll get there later in the week.
Yeah, and kind of piggybacking on the to grandmother's house we go reference I made yesterday. My grandma would always host Christmas Eve at her house, and I grew up on a farm, and their farm was down the road from us. It was a quick drive, even in the snow. And she would always talk about her childhood and her experience with Santa Claus. She called him Santa Claus.
Okay.
And she had this story that had me convinced from a child to, like, that's probably why I believed in Santa Claus for so long, is she had this very convincing story about seeing Santa Claus, like, out the window of her house growing up. And of course, later when I'm adult, she talks about how it was her uncle dressed up, but like, my grandma is the best with sound effects and just like very much getting animated into her story. She's this small little old woman. She's in her 90s now, but she would talk about how he just like popped up, and she'd just make this like direct motion up, and then how she was so scared because she saw someone looking in the windows, and it was, and then she like realized it was Santa Claus, and she like ran back to her bed to go back to sleep.
Oh wow.
Because she couldn't be up with you know, Santa Claus wouldn't come if she's not sleeping. So right. She would just tell it so convincingly that as a kid, I was like, well, my grandma has seen Santa Claus. So clearly Santa Claus is real. And I held on to that for a while. So it's my little Christmas Eve anecdote.
Cool. That's a great story. Thank you very much for that. All right. And anyone who wants to find me, you can do it very simply. Just do a search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on my website. You can find me on Twitter, or you can find me on Facebook. If you want to get in touch with Andrea, just get in touch with me and I'll pass it on to her, since she doesn't have her own website or podcast. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.